Good morning, Oregon. Thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John with another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Audio Edition podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details of the column and the podcast will be found at our anchor page at offbeatoregon.com. Do check that out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of how Oregon's highways became the envy of the West. They aren't anymore, but they once were. This story was published in 2009. It's one of the first ones that I wrote. It really isn't up to the quality standards of later ones, so if this is the first Offbeat Oregon History podcast you've listened to, you should know that it does get better than this. Speaking of which, I should let you know that I have these set up on a day-by-day sort of schedule. On Mondays, I read a column from 2011. Tuesdays, it's 2009. Wednesdays, it's 2010. Thursdays, it's something special, usually a reading from a historical piece of fiction. And on Fridays, the freshest one coming right off of the feed from 2012. That means the quality of the storytelling on Tuesdays is consistently lower because, of course, I get better as time goes by. These are the oldest ones. So I guess that's enough apologizing for the story I'm about to tell you, and I'll go ahead and tell it. These days, Oregon doesn't have much of a reputation for its road system. Both its West Coast neighbors in California and Washington have more developed interstate highway systems. But Oregon probably should have that reputation. In fact, Oregon's first freeway was built in 1955, a year before Eisenhower signed the legislation getting the nation's interstate highway system started. That was the Banfield in Portland, which was named after a legendary state highway commissioner. Today, of course, it's part of Interstate 84. And the state's road building record goes back much farther than that. Oregon was the first state west of the Mississippi to build a paved road from one of its borders all the way to the other, Highway 99. All 347 miles of it. That work was done in 1923. Oregon's highway building mojo actually got a little out of hand in the 1960s when a plot was afoot to punch a highway right down the middle of the beach in places like Nestucca Spit on the Oregon coast. That plan fetched up with a sickening thud on the bulwark of public opinion as well as federal law, and a chastened highway department had to back down. Rumor has it they also scotched at the same time plans to do the same thing all the way down the beach. When Hosso Herring, the longtime editor of the Albany Democrat Herald newspaper, first came to Oregon in the early 1960s to work at the Ashland newspaper, he found the state a motorist paradise, well-stocked with clear, straight, well-engineered, pothole-free highways, untroubled by congestion and surrounded by gorgeous scenery. It was the legacy of decades of road-building tradition in Oregon. But for all that early work, the interstates took a while to get really popular in Oregon. You might not believe that if you've been stuck on I-5 lately. At quitting time on a weekday, anywhere in the Willamette Valley, the freeway is usually pretty much bumper to bumper. But it wasn't always like this. In fact, when Bill Bowerman was coaching the University of Oregon track team in the late 1960s, the runners would use the then-newish freeway for practice. They'd run onto the freeway at the North Springfield exit, run to Coburg, and then back, running in the fast lane, going against the flow of traffic, such as there was. In fact, they'd only see a car or two, and they'd see it coming from a long way off, in plenty of time to get off onto the median to safety. Many longtime residents, me for instance, also remember times driving between Eugene and Salem when they were virtually alone, hurtling along, kings of the highway. I remember one time I was driving from Eugene to Salem in the middle of the night. I hadn't seen a car for miles, and I thought I'd see what it was like to run with my headlights off. So I switched them off, blasted along in the dark for about 10 seconds, freaked out, flipped them back on again. No way you could get away with that today. Those days are pretty much gone in the valley, although a trip from the Dalles to Pendleton on I-84 can still get pretty lonely sometimes. For younger residents, the freeways seem like part of the landscape. Always been here, always will be. But Oregon's freeway system is a relatively young one. Interstate 5 itself was finished in 1966, just over 40 years ago. Interstate 205 through the east side of the Portland metro area dates back to just 1982. And the most recent addition to the system, I-82, near Hermiston, was finished in 88. Unless you're still a teenager, or nearly so, that freeway is younger than you are. Most of these freeways had to be done as new projects. One could not simply upgrade, say, Highway 99 to an interstate freeway. That's because the businesses built up along Highway 99 felt they were dependent on having lots of cars drive by all the time. They would also have to be demolished to expand the highway from two lanes to four or six. It would cost a lot of money to buy them out. So any suggestion of changing the road to a limited access freeway just did not go down well. It was not a financial possibility. Or a political one either. Today, most of those businesses are gone. So much traffic has shifted to the interstate that many of the old arterials have turned into lonely stretches used only by highway hermits who are willing to spend an extra 20 minutes behind the wheel in exchange for not having to dodge tractor-trailer rigs on the freeway. That's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time and want some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. That's the complete catalog of about 200 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed. The website's also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which basically are just two: the Oregon Department of Transportation's website, and a 2008 interview that I conducted with Hasso Herring of the Albany Democrat Herald newspaper, of which he was at that time the editor. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, written by Carmen Ficarra. Come into Corvallis, drop me a line, let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you'd use Twitter, @offbeatoregon. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. For details of that, please see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Well, that's it for today. Coming tomorrow, we'll be talking about the Vagwan Sri Rajneesh again. This is part two in a four-part series about this far-out guru who had come to enlighten Central Oregon. Central Oregon was pretty mellow about this at first. They got a little bit more excited when his people started trying to take over Wasco County. We'll have the full story, or at least the full part two of the full story, after about 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. And in the meantime, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.